You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
And I'm so hyped right now. Anything's possible. Oh, my mama. Oh, my mama made it, man. Anything's possible.
Rainy days, jump shot, fade away. This the best Celtics podcast day to day. I get excited about it every night about it. A real C's fan wouldn't want to live their life without it. Banner 18 in the making, we gotta make it. Best squad in the East and still we can't get complacent. Most winning franchise, so the history's ancient. You could tell them other guys are going plan a vacation. Yeah, Corrales, Packard, and Jay King. Locked on, trying to get the 18th ring. The most in-depth coverage that you ever gonna hear. Well respected in the city like Russell's career. It's Raining Jay. Raining Jay. Millie.
Hey there, welcome back to the Locked On Celtics Podcast here on the Locked On Podcast Network. Thank you for making us part of your daily routine. And if we sound excited, it's because we are podcasting after the Red Sox took a 2-0 lead in the World Series. And we're pretty damn happy about that. We're the Raining Jays, John Corrales, Samuel Jamison, Packard III. And unfortunately, we tried to get Jay King on the tripod. Couldn't do it, but you know what?
He's out in the wild, wild west of Oklahoma City. And you know, you get Jay King on a town like that, you just don't know what's going to happen. You can't keep track of him.
Yeah, he just shows it and disappears. It's nuts. Well, Oklahoma City, I mean, it's just such a... It's really a wild time. Like, anything can happen there.
You can't even blame Jay King for...
He just gets so caught up in Oklahoma City. What can you do? So... well, you know what? We'll try to get a hold of him later. Who knows? What the hell? We asked you to mailbag it, and you did. And I want to just give a shout out right away to Jam for surprising me before we started recording. He has everything organized in order in a coherent. Well, I'm gonna call it coherent. I haven't actually heard.
Yeah, you don't know yet.
I don't know what you've gotten for us, but you're in control. You have
all right.
You have the floor, my friend. Let's go.
Well, first, we have to say happy birthday to the Riffsman, praise be. We're going to call this the official Riffsman mailbag. So I asked for a lot of good rain and junk questions. So we're junk heavy. The back half of this episode is going to be deep in the junk. But there's some legitimate Rain and Jay's questions. And we're going to start off with Ivan Persaud at Ivan Spitfire 93. I like that. It reminds me of Dylon. He spits off fire. And he asks, I know the numbers say we're just missing open shots, but am I crazy for thinking we have some legitimate flaws in the offense?
Legitimate flaws in the offense. I don't know. I don't think there are material flaws necessarily in the offense, other than the fact that guys are just going off a little, I think a little too much on their own. And maybe if there is a flaw in the offense is that it allows for that and it allows for guys to make reads, but it's supposed to be a read and react offense. And the whole point of it is to teach guys to make the right reads. And if they're not making the right reads and if their read is to take a contested mid-range jumper, then I don't think that's the flaw in the offense. I think it's the flaw in the guy who's making the read.
Yeah, and it's hard to ignore the first part of this question. Like, I know the numbers say we're missing open shots, but they're getting open shots. Like, I don't know what the flaw in the offense is. They're like, I think it's only been four games, so the sample size is very small. They missed a lot of open shots against the Magic, and I think they had more selfish moments. Definitely against the Knicks, like it felt like the worst of those games. I do think in the half court, they are struggling to get open looks. I don't know why, but it specifically feels like in the first quarter, they especially struggle. They haven't gotten out to a good start yet. And so I think they're going to get better. You're right about it. It's reading, reacting. It's just guys playing together and like figuring things out. I don't think it's a huge problem. And this leads us right into the next question from our own Sammy Sheehan. The Celtics are currently shooting 13% on open shots, meaning open three-pointers, meaning 4 to 6 feet of space. Do you think that guy, do you think that will improve?
What was the number?
13% on wide open threes. Yeah, so, or think, 4 to 6 feet of space.
That's, I think that's what we can expect all season long. Just a complete brick fest. 13%.
These guys are not good. No. I don't know why people thought they were.
I can't
13% is like extraordinarily low. That's like, kind of insane.
That's like Marcus Smart alone, if he's the only person who shot three-pointers the rest of the way, would raise that percentage. And he would, it wouldn't be by much, but he alone could raise that percentage the rest of the way. Yeah. I mean, I don't know why. I don't know why they are shooting so poorly, other than just to say that they are. And sometimes the teams do. And it could be any number of things. It could just be dumb luck.
Dumb luck and statistics, man. It's only been four games. I do a little bit of stats for my professional job, and this sample size is way too small to make any judgments. And shouts to Sammy Sheehan for writing this article on Celtics Blog, explaining, diving deeper in the numbers about how many open shots they're missing. Not great, but it's also kind of something the Celtics have done. At least last year, they went on stretches where they generated a lot of open looks but didn't make them. And that was a lot on the second unit where they had less talented shooters. I think here, they just have way, like, you just have much better shooters, so I expect them to, this not to be a sustained problem.
Right. Like, Al Horford's not going 1 of 7 for, like, every night. It's just not.
He will if they're running him off pin down screens like they did against the Magic, but that was only one. He did the other six he missed were traditional Al Horford pick and pops that he should have.
Yeah.
Totally. He'll definitely hit moving forward. Right. All right, moving on to Joe Lally with a hot take. He's at Moya Machine, Mooey Machine, I don't know, Booyah Machine. Yeah, that makes more sense. This is his hot take. Brad's lineups and minutes restrictions are creating a stilted offense. No one has a chance to get it going. Basketball has a natural rhythm, and these lineups are hard stops. Braden Jays.
Well, I would hesitate to put it on Brad because one of the minutes restrictions is Gordon Hayward, and it's because he's coming back from the injury. So to his point, yeah, it does because – you can't start the second half with Gordon Hayward. You're trying to figure out different lineups, and you're not playing the way you want to actually play. And his point is correct in that when guys have defined roles, it's much easier to mentally prepare. I am going to play from this time to this time. I know this is going to be my role. But at the same time, things change. Guys get hurt sometimes. Sometimes there is a minutes restriction. Sometimes, especially early on, Brad Stevens does tinker with lineups in October, November, December, so we can figure out in January, February, March, April, which pairings work. Theoretically, we've talked theoretical things that should happen on the floor that don't. He's got to put them into practice and see if the theory comes into play. So these guys are professionals. I wouldn't put it completely on that. Yeah, you can say that there's no rhythm and there's a little bit of confusion about when they're on the floor, but shooting is about being comfortable. Shooting's about getting that repetition. And they are, like I said, they're professionals. They should go out there and eventually be able to find a way to get that comfortable, get comfortable and shoot better.
Yeah, I think it's more on the players to learn how to, like, deal with. I think that, I mean, they clearly are playing less minutes. Terry Rozier played 15 minutes in a game, and that's just something you wouldn't expect given his talent and his role last year. But I think that it's on the players to kind of figure out how to be best in, I guess, shorter periods of time or, like, get into rhythm. It's, I don't know if the people are new around here, but it's never Brad's fault. I mean, even that the last ATO against the Magic that resulted in a Kyrie, like, turnaround jump, three in the corner. That's not Brad's fault. I don't, even if it was, not around here.
I want to bring up something that Zach Lowe said in his last podcast, though, about the Celtics offense against Orlando, where he thought they were overpassing and they passed themselves out of some open looks, which was an interesting way to look at it. I haven't had an opportunity to rewatch because I'm in the process of moving. I'm trying to do five things at once. I will go back and take a look at that. If that's, and I trust Zach Lowe to when he sees it, to that it's actually factual. When we saw early on that they were being too individual, and now that we see them overpassing, that's actually that's actually not a bad thing. Like, it's a bad thing that they're overpassing and maybe passing themselves out of bad looks. But the positive spin on that is
they're passing.
They're right. Like, they understood that there were two isolation, that they were too focused on their own offense individually. So what they ended up doing was being too unselfish, which went too far the other way, which means that eventually they'll find the middle ground, because they tried to find that non-isolation offense and they went too far with it. So if that's what that reaction was, then they can go back and look at film and be like, okay, we did it a little too much. Now if we dial it back and find that middle ground, then they can eventually find where their offense lies. I also think that Gordon Hayward slowly finding himself in each game becoming more like the Gordon Hayward that we remembered is a much bigger deal than we really realize at the moment, because he is so good that he'll draw too much attention, and he's such a good passer that he'll be able to kind of boost that Celtics offense once he's getting right, and we can see him slowly start to get right.
Yeah, I hadn't considered passing too much, but thinking back, there were a bunch of crazy possessions in that Magic game where it just felt like the ball was bouncing around. I didn't read it as too much passing. I read it as just kind of like sloppier play. But, I mean, I trust Zach Lowe way more. It goes Brad, then Zach Lowe, then everyone else. That is interesting. And I agree. I think Hayward was Hayward's made progress every single game he's played. And it was nice to see Kyrie score like 18 points in a half. He definitely looks a lot more comfortable in the second half of that Magic game, and is really the only one who scored. All right. Moving on to more stuff about the minutes crunch. This is from Q at QCNBA. Does the concrete manifestation of minutes crunch, abstract in the preseason, obvious now, change Ainge's asking price for Rozier or Mook? So basically, it gets back to the minutes question. It's our first hypothetical trade question of the year. Does the fact that they have so many good players make it more likely for them to trade Tito or Marcus Morris?
Well, no, not right now. Especially not now, because they're still probably holding out for a much bigger trade. And I still stand by the Terry Rozier as insurance in case Marcus Smart is involved in a deal. I think that still holds. And if they're nowhere in February and they know that Marcus Smart's going to be here long term and that's just how it is, maybe at that point for Rozier. For Morris, they need somebody else to step up. They need to know that if he is traded, first of all, if he's traded, it's because of tax issues.
That's what I was going to bring up.
Yeah, that's the only reason he'd be traded, and it would be because the ownership says, we're happy to pay a tax, but you know, if we can push it off, let's do that. We don't want to pay the repeater tax. If somebody like Ojale or Yabu step up, or somebody else steps up and can give the Celtics, if they feel like someone else can give them similar production, then I can see them trading Marcus Morris for that reason. But I'm getting to a point now where I'd kind of be surprised if either trade happens.
Yeah, I'd be shocked, but that tax is pretty hefty, and I feel like they're much more likely to. Well, they're currently in the tax now, but given the Kyrie extension likely coming next year, they're going to have a huge, much bigger salary next year, and then like. There is incentive to avoid the repeater tax, and so I could see Mook being traded, but only if you're right. Maybe if Gordon Hayward just like comes back and is like an all-star again, and you can just put him on bench lineups, and the scoring is not a problem. But so far, with scoring being a main issue, I just see zero chance in them trading Mook. Moving on to a question from the Jack Michael, who has a reigning junk, contribution later, not a question, but a contribution from Jack, because he is he's the bee's knees. Does it feel like Jalen is getting squeezed out of the offense a bit? Obviously, he's struggling, but how much of that can be he's not getting consistent touches like last year?
I think he's absolutely getting squeezed out right now. It's just not working, and he's the biggest, he's getting hit the hardest. I said it on my radio thing yesterday that I put in the podcast, but I'll repeat it. I think that there are a couple of things that are happening with Jaylen Brown. First of all, the offense isn't like, the offense is full of guys who can get their own shots. Jaylen Brown is the least able to get his own shot in those in of the starting five, and it's just tougher for him. That's not the player that he is. He can take advantage of certain mismatches, but he's not really a shot creator. So he's not.
Well,
go ahead.
Sorry, this relates perfectly to the next question: is at what point? This is from Sig D. At what point does Brad sit down with Jaylen and tell him that he's the fifth option and should stick to draining open threes rather than putting the ball on the floor? Do you think Jaylen should just, like, post in the corner and just hit shots like a pure, like, catch and shoot type of guy? I feel like in order to enhance Jaylen, he still needs to attack off the ball. He's still pretty explosive, and he also he can post smaller guards on switches, and I feel like if he doesn't attack that feels like a waste.
He can. It's got to be. This is tough when it comes to coaching a guy like this. It's tough because you want to kind of finesse some of the things that you want him to do. You don't want to take away any of his confidence because, going back to my previous point, that I think defensively, not just the fact that he's being asked to guard the other team's best player a lot, and that takes away a lot of energy. I think the foul rules have been this new freedom of the freedom of movement thing is a big deal. He's gotten some foul trouble. I think the defensive issues have gotten into his head, and I think that has maybe not. When I say get into his head, maybe not like deep, but it's a concern. You can see him reacting to it. And it's hard to be concerned with your defense and then go on offense and play freely. So from a coaching perspective, you don't want to take away the guy's confidence, be like, no, don't drive. You want to show him situations where the drive is good. And then when it's not, say, you should have been in the corner on this play. We'd like him to be in the corner on more plays. I think as a catch and shoot corner guy, he'd have a lot of value, but he should also attack when the ball is moving and he's moving and he can catch the ball on the move, not just standing still and putting it down to his knees and kind of making a shimmy and then trying to take a guy. If he can catch the ball on the move and then use his speed and explosiveness to turn a corner with two dribbles, now you got something. But that's the important thing, is you've got to get him moving and in situations to take advantage of his athleticism and his speed, and then the rest will come. Asking him to create, just to flat-out create, that's not going to be what gets his offense going. So I think as things kind of settle down defensively and he can learn how to play defense with the new fouls, he'll get a little bit more comfortable on the court. And as the rest of the Celtics kind of calm down and figure out how to move the ball the right way and get Jaylen Brown moving the right way, you will start to see his offense kind of catch up as well.
Yeah, no, first of all, the freedom of movement calling is bullshit, and I don't like it.
nobody really like, likes it.
Nobody likes it. You're guarding a guy on the perimeter. There's going to be some contact. Like, I just don't like the point of emphasis on it. I know everyone says it's going to go away, but first, it's just it's less fun. For Jaylen, it feels like you don't want to take away his aggressiveness, especially in transition. He's so explosive to the basket that I think he can really do damage. I think it's in the half court where you're right. You want to find him getting moving in space because Jaylen dribbling at the top of the key is not your ideal offense. And that doesn't really happen that often, but he is much more of a player in space. And I guess being able to knock down open shots would be more beneficial. But I think really, you don't want to stunt his aggressiveness at all, because I think that's like one of his best qualities is either attacking immediately off the catch or getting catching the ball with some motion already. But I don't know. I think it is also four games, so I think he'll be fine. Hopefully they stop calling those goddamn fouls on him, because it's quite frustrating. He already has a trouble biting on pump fakes and stuff, so this is not helping.
No, it's not helping. Hey, before we continue, I want to just remind everybody that we have compiled the ultimate Twitter feed on Locked On NBA Net. It's every host. All of us are on there. You go and follow Locked On NBA Net, and you've got all of us compiled into one place. So you want every game, all the time, all the hosts kind of giving their contribution. Check that out. We appreciate you following us on Twitter, giving us the Twitter questions over the hashtag Rant and Jays, Rant and Junk. Follow Locked On NBA Net to get all of the Locked On Podcast Network in one feed and keep up with everything that's going on in the NBA. Okay, Jim, let's continue.
All right, we got two more Rant and Jays. The NBA final, this is from Jovian Shadow. The NBA's final 2 minutes report, what is the point of it if it isn't going to have any outcome? Why call out that Blake Griffin traveled and then fouled on the game-winning play if there's nothing going to change from it? And I know the answer is about gambling and wanting to be more like transparent, but it does feel kind of silly to, like, Blake Griffin has this amazing game, 50 points, has this crazy play to end it, and then you just come out like, wah, wah. Both of those things should have, like, it should have never happened.
Yeah.
It's kind of silly.
It is. I know there's the interest of transparency. It's the acknowledgement that there are mistakes. It's I don't know. I know what they're trying to do. I think that they're really putting the officials in a tough spot because I think that there needs to be material changes in how the game is officiated. I advocate for a fourth referee, and I think certain kind of reviews are necessary and something that could be triggered or reviewed from somewhere else, and then a signal comes back to the refs like, nope, that was a travel. Like, then something, I don't know exactly what it is, but something needs to change. You can't just say, okay, you three refs are out there and you keep making mistakes. We're going to tell everybody you keep making mistakes and do nothing to fix the officiating. I'm sure the officials would be happy. Well, first of all, they'd be happy to have a fourth ref. That's more jobs. And I think anything that gets the game flowing and gets it right is important. So I think, yeah, I appreciate what the NBA is trying to do. But if you're going to do it and just say people are making mistakes, then fix the damn mistakes.
Yeah, no, at no point has refereeing got noticeably better in any of the time I've been watching basketball. Maybe that's just some bias because you only really focus on the refs when they're doing a bad job. It's not like, oh man, that was called a real clean sheet out there. But at no point have I just been like, yeah, that's fantastic. Final question from Alan Ayers. Sounds like Stevens is putting in a five system like the one the Spurs run. Could the early struggles just be learning, be the learning curve of a new system that's based on a lot of read and react? I think it has great upside despite the clunkiness. So you already talked earlier about the kind of the read and react thing, but I think like the idea of, Stevens playing five out, that's not a new concept for the Celtics. A lot of their actions, start with all five guys outside the 3-point line. I mean, that's just something you do when Al Horford can play center and can really, you can run pick and pops for him to, just play three. Like they'll even run five out with Aaron Baines on the court. It really just means the center starts at the top of the key and the actions start from there. So they'll do a lot of dribble handoffs and entries that way. I don't think it's that new of a system. And so I wouldn't blame them for doing that. I think they've been running it a little less, than, at least I thought they would, in these first four games, just cause it's something I've been, looking out for. But I don't think that you can blame a new system because that's something that came basically with Al Horford, probably before Al Horford.
Yeah. I don't think there's anything new. I think the offense just needs to be fine tuned. So
you know what they've been doing a bunch is that play where Al Horford sets like a pick at the foul line and then Jason Tatum comes across the ball. That's their favorite play. That play's run constantly.
I have to see what you're talking about, but sure. I'd have to see the play to know what you're talking about.
It's basically Jason Tatum doesn't have the ball, but he comes from the baseline up to Al Horford and runs, I guess, kind of horizontally to the wing, and he gets the entry pass there. There's a lot of variations off of that. They used it a lot in the Philly series last year.
Okay.
So it's less of a five out thing because no one's there, but I don't know. Five out is usually better for just like playing with pace. And so I think maybe playing I don't know. It's hard to tell the Celtics offense right now, but I definitely don't think that's a new concept.
No. I think they just, like I said, they just need to figure out, just fine tune it. Like, I'm not worried about the Celtics offense. I'm really not. Like, they'll be okay. Again, I think Sam Sheehan was onto something there. The fact that the Celtics are getting so many wide open looks. Their offense is generating wide open looks. Okay, so that's the beginning of what you want from your offense. Now, it's where are those wide open looks? Are they from spots that you don't want to be shooting from necessarily? Okay, so then you tweak that. But if you're still wide open from there, then you take advantage of it. Then if you're not supposed to be shooting from a particular spot, 20 feet away from the basket, then you get to 18, 17, 16 feet and see what the defender will do and see if somebody else can get a wide open look. It's not that hard. It's that these guys, I think, there is a feeling that the offense isn't going great. And maybe some of these guys are thinking, well, I'm a great offensive player. I can just do some things on my own. And you pass. We haven't gotten a good shot. All right, I'm Jason Tatum and I can get any shot I want, basically. Or I'm Kyrie Irving, I can get any shot I want. And a lot of times you drive and you've got a guy kind of on his heels and you just know that if I stop and pull up, there's zero chance he can challenge this shot. And that is almost entirely a mid-range jumper. Rather than driving and trying to challenge at the rim and maybe you don't get the call, I'm not inside these guys' heads necessarily. It's possible that some of that stuff is happening, but I don't think there's anything system related. I think these guys just, they'll figure it out.
I think, yeah, everyone needs to calm down because it's been four games and the offense will eventually be good again. And I think that's the perfect opportunity to transfer over to a reigning junk. This one's for Joe Lally. And, the question, more dynamic media personality, John Smoltz or By J. King?
Bruh.
the best thing is that Jay responded to this and immediately said,
the kid.
J. King for
it's,
sure.
It's the kid for sure.
Known for his very dynamic media personality. I've actually, John Smoltz isn't that great. I used to do video production and stuff for sports, and I was a runner for the World Series in 2013. Had to drive around John Smoltz a lot. Boring guy. Not that exciting. Dan Plesak, on the other hand, that guy's a laugh riot.
I joke around about Jay, but Jay is a perfectly dynamic personality.
Jay King's got himself a fresh haircut, and he's looking smooth.
Yeah,
it's a very different Jay King than I'm used to around the Celtics beat. He looks put together. His clothes are clean.
Yeah.
His odor is not bad. It's insane. And so he's pushing John Smoltz right now because, like I said, John Smoltz, not that exciting.
No, I'll go with Jay King. Not by a lot, but I'll go with Jay King.
All right. This is from Craig at Aruda 1155. If Devers is Yabu, who else do we have? So this is comparing Red Sox players to Celtics players. And this starts from my contention that Devers is just Yabu, but if he was talented.
Right.
And that got a lot of pushback from angry Celtics fans and the Yabu hive. And I understand. But I'm yet to be fully sold on the Yabu good basketballer train. Someone did respond that that means that Devers is the Yabu, but with the swagless Yabu. I don't know. I really messed up the delivery of that one. But basically saying Yabu is cool off the court, and I would strong agree.
Sure. But yeah.
Are the other Celtics Red Sox comparisons?
Well, I've always compared Jackie Bradley Jr. to Marcus Smart in that they're both insane defensively. Very little offense, and whenever they provide offense, it's like whoa! I can't believe it's
awesome.
Yeah.
And the defense, they do really cool plays that make you go, whoa.
Yes, of course. Who else?
Craig said Mookie's Kyrie, Xander is Jalen, and then Jackie Bradley's Smart. So he's on the Smart train. But I would say Mookie is more like Al Horford in the fact that he does everything. But I don't know. I think that's maybe selling Mookie a little bit short because he is a MVP candidate.
He is. Yeah, I would say Mookie is more like Gordon Hayward in that they both can do everything. And Gordon Hayward hasn't put together an MVP type season, but I think when you're looking at a guy that can play defense and score and run and all that stuff, like, I think probably, I would say Gordon Hayward's probably our currently most well-rounded player. Unless you want to say Jason Tatum, because he will be putting together MVP type season.
I think Jason Tatum's a pretty good comp, just because of the greatness. You know, I feel like Jason Tatum has the potential to be a top five player like Mookie is. I don't know. I don't know enough about the Red Sox to feel like, to make app comparisons, but, Xander and Jalen feel like it kind of makes sense. The thing about the Red Sox, they have all these kind of just wacky players. Just like, who's the Andrew Benintendi? I don't know. That guy, it's really hard to compare sports. They're wildly different people who play basketball and baseball.
We did.
Except for, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, we did get a question about if the Celtics' current roster was to play a baseball game, who'd play each position?
Ooh, that is a good question.
That comes from at the Kyle Costigan. So I would put Al Horford at first base.
Yeah, I was about to say that. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, I think Kyrie and Rozier would be your middle infielders.
Yes, with Tito as the flashier shortstop.
Probably. I would put, I think, Mook at third because, you know.
Oh my God, you're just saying all the things I'm thinking.
Yeah.
Of course.
Yeah. And then
Smurf is the catcher, obviously.
No, see, I want to put Smurf in center field like Jackie Bradley. I'll put Aaron.
Oh no,
Baines
I put Jalen Brown in center field. He feels like the super athlete, guy who can track down everything. But Smurf, I mean, you want to go strong up the middle, so you got to put Smurf at catcher, center field. We can agree to disagree there. Okay. Jason Tatum feels like a power hitting left fielder or DH. That guy could just hit bombs.
Yeah. I was gonna put maybe Hayward in left.
Hayward could also be in center field.
Yeah. Well,
really, it's interchangeable outfield at this point.
Yeah, you could do that.
But who do you have pitching? I go with Brad Stevens. That guy's a Greg Maddux style genius. It's all about control with him. He throws tops out at like 85.
See, I would think. I would put Tatum as your pitcher, and my outfield would be Hayward, Smart, and Jalen Brown with Aaron Baines as the catcher, because you got all of Australia back there. No one's moving him if there's a play at the plate.
That is fair. I was thinking maybe putting Kyrie at pitcher just because it feels like pitching is such a head game that Kyrie could have some mental dominance, but I would insist that he throw lefty. Because lefty pitchers are always way craftier than righty pitchers. Like with that big Barry Zito curveball. I just imagine Kyrie doing some freaky stuff there. Maybe having a knuckle curve. I don't know. Maybe a new pitch we haven't even heard of yet. That's the way I see it going. So there's no way you can go wrong, really. And there's no one else on the Celtics bench. I could see Semi Ojeleye coming in and throwing the ball 107 miles an hour.
I was just going to say, Ojeleye coming in like to some intimidating music as your closer with his, like, major league, the Charlie Sheen, like the sleeves ripped off, so you could just see his biceps, and people are like, you know what? I'll just take the strikeout, thanks.
just throwing 150 like only fastballs.
His first pitch is like right under your chin, and then you soil yourself, and then he's striking you out.
That sounds exactly right. He'd be terrifying 60 feet away. That's terrible.
That would be horrible. He's like 6'8". He'd be, you know how giant he would look out there?
Oh, man, we need to get him on that baseball stadium.
People do not realize how small baseball players are. Baseball players are not large people. And
Brock Holt is like 5'4".
Yeah, these guys are small. I mean, look, Jose Altuve is like 5'4". Like, Mookie Betts is, what, 5'8", 5'9", 5'10", maybe? Like, those guys are not big. You put Ojeleye out there, who's what? What's he really, like 6'6", 6'7", or something like that? He would look like a freaking monster on the mound.
You guys ever seen an ox on a baseball stadium? In a baseball stadium? You'd seriously be an ox on the pitcher's mound. It'd be terrifying.
Yes, it would be.
This is from Patrick Loonsbury at Ball and Opinions. Wow, really struggling with the old reading today. This shows what I get for organizing, doing pre-work. If you could pick a Celtic to cook you dinner, who are you picking? Great question. Also, what would be their go-to dish, in your opinion?
Oh.
I love asking, in your opinion, for this crazy hypothetical.
Well, instead of facts, I'll go with my opinion. I'm going to go with Al Horford for two reasons. I feel like with the family, he already knows how to cook. And I love Latin food. And I feel like he's got some recipes from the Dominican that are probably really killer. And I would really want some of that.
I think the answer to me is pretty obvious. It's Terry Rozier. Just because he had that vine about that cook life. Got my boys right here. I don't hoop no more. And so, and I think his signature dish would be a spaghetti and ranch sugar sandwich.
Sugar.
And I think I would love it. And so just because of the cook life vine, it has to be him.
I knew you were going to say that.
All about that cook life. Tamron Tabatabi? This is a person I followed on Twitter for a while. He's in Australia. I believe he used to write for things. This is the first time I've ever had to say his name out loud, and it was difficult. Personally, I'd like to know which Celtics player in the 2000s would have made for the best weird Celtics Twitter memes. And this started a whole discussion on the timeline, so I appreciate Cameron for this question.
Antoine Walker.
Just for the quote that why do you shoot so many threes? Because I can't shoot fours. That's the Riff's brand right there. Shout out to the Riff, man. Praise be. Happy birthday. That's classic stuff. Scott Pollard, Vitaly Potapenko.
Oh, Vitaly would be great. Oh, my God. Just pictures of Vitaly smoking.
Steve Merkel sent us a picture of Marty Conlin, who I just don't know who that is, but he looks like he should never have been on a basketball court.
Marty Conlin, Providence College's own Marty Conlin. I remember Marty Conlin. He played for Rick Pitino at Providence College before getting drafted by the Celtics. I only know this because I'm a Rhode Islander, and I went to the Providence College basketball camps and actually saw Marty Conlin working out there when I was in high school.
Did he have nice slick back hair and look like a nice boy like he does in these photos?
No, he was a big, tall goof.
I'm trying to think of others from the mid-2000s. Twan, I just came across a gif of it. I'll retweet right now of him doing the Walker Wiggle. And that right there is just – that's what memes are made of. It's just pure magic in a visual form.
Yeah. I got to go with – I mean, who else – there are guys that Delonte West.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, Delonte West kind of crossed over. He was – when I was first starting RedsArmy.com and I was Photoshopping before memes were called memes, I used a bunch of Delonte West back in the day. So he would definitely be very memeable for sure.
I strongly agree. He got arrested with many guns on him in a motorcycle and allegedly had relations with LeBron James' mom. It's a runaway story right there.
Yeah.
All right. This is from the great John Duke at CSL Duke. In honor of the Riffs man, if there was a choice between having a thick jack combat ready frame or the ability to bend space and time, what would you choose?
Ooh. I feel like the ability to bend space and time would allow you to somehow get into.
You could just keep on bending time so you could go to the Ojai factory until you had a thick jack free.
Yeah. It's like one of those, like, would you rather have $1 million or a wish? And like, I'd wish for more wishes and then you could get $1 million. I think bending space and time is always, I think that's the way to go. And if I had it, I'd screw it up. I'd waste it. I'd like bend it to the point where it almost broke, and I would still procrastinate to a point where I almost didn't get something done.
What exactly is bending space mean in this scenario? Does that mean you can just like travel from large distances. Bending time makes more sense to me. That's some classic time travel stuff. But what is bending space?
I feel like you're onto it. I feel like bending space would allow you to, instead of light years in a linear traveling, you could bend space to a point where the place you wanted to go is some sort of a parabola now rather than a straight line, and you could get there quicker. And you could bend time to get you there quicker.
Oh, so it's kind of a double. It feels a little bit unfair. I know the Time Lord is plenty capable of this, but he's a special individual, and I think I trust him with that power. I don't know if I trust myself.
Yeah, I think there's like a teleportation type of thing involved in bending space.
Give me the thick Jack frame. I think that's all I can my weak brain could handle.
Yeah, I would probably screw up the bigger powers. I'd probably screw up the big. I'd screw it all up, so it doesn't matter.
All right. The last question on the Praise Be to the Riffsman mailbag, the reigning Jung segment. Can we get a you stupid segment, please? And we definitely need one. I'm just imagining Jay King telling us daily people in his life who have been stupid and he thinks are stupid. And so, I think it's fantastic. I tried calling Jay King mid episode, to try to get him to come on, but he did not respond, but I think a stupid segment would be fantastic.
Oh, see, that's why my recording kind of stopped and started. That makes sense now.
Oh man, I hope I didn't goof that up.
So we'll see what happens when I go back. If there's any sort of weird thing in the middle of it, we may have missed something, but no, I was recording and then something happened and it says recording the call. So I think it was like in the middle of what you were saying. So that's fine. I'll go back and check it out, or I won't. I don't care.
Oh, well, who knows?
It's
pretty late. I called him when the John Smoltz question came up because I wanted him to defend himself for his hubris. But then we both ended up agreeing with him that he is better than John Smoltz, and he didn't pick up. So I forgot about it.
Oh man.
But yes, he needs to call things stupid because it's funny.
Yeah, it's just I don't want to force it because his "you stupid" is very organic. But I think we're gonna do the taco truck, and I think. So I forget who it was. Somebody had a great suggestion. Why don't we just do it on Tuesdays? I think the Tuesday show should be Taco Tuesday Taco Truck. So that'll be the time we do our weekly thing. But like Sunday could be like "you stupid" Sunday. And that's when we record our Monday show. So Jay could call things stupid on Sundays.
See, the thing about Jay is he's reluctant to make a strong take. And so when he does, it's a fresh surprise. He's like, oh, he's really coming out hard against something.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, you're right. You don't want to force it. So I think we'll leave it to his leisure, but we'll have to let him know that we want to hear his thoughts on who is stupid, more regularly.
Yeah. We just got to prod him and get him to kind of admit to some things. He's just got to let it loose, man.
And that's what he's doing out there in Oklahoma City, man.
Well,
you watch out.
Lord knows what's happening in Oklahoma City. That place
He might end up in Tulsa tonight. You don't know, JK.
Oh, no, you can't. Man, bad things happen in Tulsa. He'll get arrested there.
I'm sure he will. Don't even get me started on the Oklahoma criminal justice system. That's it. I'm out. That's the perfect place to end.
That's it. Forget it. Yeah, damn that Oklahoma criminal justice system.
They're doing their best to improve. I don't want to completely speak ill of them.
Are they really doing their best?
Oh, I think they could go a little bit farther, but I think they've made great strides.
All right. Well, maybe when we do the Lockdown Criminal Justice System podcast, we can get more in depth.
Oh, believe me, I'm ready for that.
I'm not. So I'm going to still do this podcast here and wrap this show up and say thank you.
Lockdown Justice with Jam Packard. Oh, my God, that would be dope.
We do the Law and Order that dun-dun.
Yeah. Oh, man. Jam's Court. Oh, my God. So many new segments.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, jeez. Well, I think we just lost Jam Packard as he goes and launches his new podcast career. That'd be awesome. Just an irreverent criminal justice podcast.
Judge Jam. I think it's like way too serious of a topic to like deal with my general goofiness.
Yeah,
but I think it could work. Who knows?
You turn the horribly broken United States criminal justice system into like a morning zoo show. Yeah.
Judge Jim. I feel like that's the whole show right there.
Yeah, that's it.
Normal points, and then I'll just finish off with punctuated. Go, Judge Jim.
That's it. That's it. You got it. That's a winner. That's a winner. We'll pitch David Locke on that. All right, everybody. If you're a first-time listener, my God, whew, I just can't commend you enough for sticking through with all of this. But you got here, so now subscribe. Search for Locked On Celtics wherever you get your podcasts. Subscribers, please. 5-star ratings, good reviews, and share the podcast. Spread the word. Tell everybody. Listen to the Locked On Celtics podcast here on the Locked On Podcast Network.